Unit 7, A Post-Industrial Society, Part 1.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's nice to see so many of you here. Well, I'd like to introduce our two guests this evening. Mr. Andrew Frobisher, who spent many years in Malaysia in the 1950s and 60s, and knows the country very well indeed. And, on my right, Dr. Harry Benson, who's an agricultural economist.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Well, the purpose of this evening is to find out more about that fascinating substance, rubber, and the effects that it has on that fascinating country, Malaysia. I believe, Mr. Frobisher, that Malaysia is at the same time an extremely rich and rather poor country. How is this possible?
Yes, well, that's quite true, Monica. Malaysia's population is by now over 12 million. And per head, on paper, the citizens are richer than those of the UK.
But of course, that wealth is not so evenly distributed. In fact, in 1981, it was estimated that 37% of the population were below the poverty line.
Yeah, well, whatever that means. And anyway, shouldn't it be, was below the poverty line?
Yes, of course. Sorry, Andrew.
Yes, well, as I was saying, much of Malaysia's wealth is based on rubber. Now, I remember my planting
yes,
days
yes,
just off
yes,
the...
Yes, 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 you're quite right there, Andrew. Rubber represents about 20% of the gross national product and 30% of export earnings. This puts Malaysia in a very good position internationally, since rubber is an example of what we might call a post-industrial industry.
Well, what do you mean by that?
What does that mean?
What is post-industrial society?
Most manufacturing industries are based on fossil fuels, for example, coal and oil. Now, the problem is that these will not last forever. They are finite. Sooner or later, they will run out. Now, rubber is a natural product. The energy source involved in its creation is sunlight. Now, sunlight, we hope, will outlast coal and oil, and best of all, sunlight is free. So, it is much cheaper to produce natural rubber, which, as we all know, comes from trees, and to use up all those fossil fuels, both as fuels and as raw materials, in making synthetic rubber in factories. Rubber is one of the world's strategic products, so you can see what a good position Malaysia is in, and it would help if she could produce more.
Well, what stands in the way, then?
Ah, well, it's the way they go about cultivating it. You see, I remember in my day, just after the...
Yes, people have this image of vast estates centrally run, but that's just not the case, even if almost a quarter of the population is involved one way and another with the production of rubber.
Yeah, well, that's if you count the families.
Oh, yes. Almost 3 million people are involved, but the picture is a very fragmented one. Do you realize that there are 2 million hectares of land under cultivation for rubber in Malaysia, but that 70% of this area is divided amongst smallholders? 500,000 of them, who between them produce 60% of the country's rubber.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that in terms of quality of life. Though I remember
just after the war, there was... Yes, quite right.
Yeah.
But being a smallholder does present problems. For example, when it comes to replacing old trees, you'll know about this, Andrew, and the average useful life of a rubber tree is about 30 years.
Yes,
this can cause financial problems for the small farmer. The problem is being tackled, however, by some very enlightened insurance schemes available to the smallholder, which can give him help through the difficult years. After all, the new trees take some years to mature and start producing rubber.
Yes, indeed they do.
Look, I've got an overhead projection here, which I think will be useful to make the various problems and their solutions clearer to us all.
Overhead projection? There wasn't anything wrong with a blackboard in my time, you know.
No, but this is clearer and neater and up to date. So, here you see a summary of the position of rubber in Malaysia's economy, and here is the first problem and the solution that has been found through these insurance schemes.
Yes, I see. That's really very clear.
Now, for the second and really major problem.
And may I ask what that is?
Boredom and fatigue.
Boredom? What do you mean by that?
Well, as with so many societies, the young people are leaving the land for the cities, leaving no one behind to carry on their parents' business. The root cause seems to be simply boredom. Mm. Rubber is just not that entertaining a product to be involved with. It is labor-intensive in the extreme. Each tree on a plantation has to be tapped by hand every other day.
Tapped?
Yes,
well, we know.
Yes. The trunk is cut and the latex that comes out is collected in a cup. This is collected on the next day. 400 trees per day is the average figure per worker, which means 800 trees under the care of each worker, 10 hours a day. Now, as I said previously, the main problem is that of the boredom. The work is not only hard, it is also mind-blowingly tedious.
So, have you got any suggestions to make things more interesting for them?
Well, not so much me, but the Malaysians are doing some very good work in this field. One idea is to make the work on the plantations more varied and profitable by introducing other products which are compatible with continuing to grow rubber trees.
Part 2.
So, have you got any suggestions to make things more interesting for them?
Well, not so much me, but the Malaysians are doing some very good work in this field. One idea is to make the work on the plantations more varied and profitable by introducing other products which are compatible with continuing to grow rubber trees.
For example?
Well, the most promising line seems to be to encourage smallholders to raise livestock which can live amongst the trees.
Yes, I hear they've started trying raising chickens and turkeys.
Yes, yes, indeed. I have another OHP at this point.
OHP?
Overhead projection.
Ah!
Anyway, you can see here the different types of animals that have been tried. At first sight, chickens seemed ideal. After all, they did originate as jungle birds. However, excuse me, so far the profits on chickens have proved disappointing. The turkey seemed an excellent choice, since it could live amongst the trees, living very well off the seeds of the rubber trees, which lie scattered all over the forest floors, and are put to no other use.
But the turkey, it's hardly an established part of the Malaysian diet.
Exactly. So far, the most successful candidate has been the sheep. Now, sheep. Sheep will eat the weeds, which will save the cultivator money and work, and they are a source of meat, which is acceptable both to Hindus and Muslims.
Yes, yes. That's most important in multicultural Malaysia.
Yes, yes, and of course they can also be used for their milk, their wool and their skins.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And now, as you can see on my OHP...
Well, thank you both very, very much to both our guests. Well, what lies ahead for Malaysia? Can her researchers and scientists continue to find ways of increasing the rubber yield? Can the labour-intensive and tedious life of the rubber plantation be made interesting and varied enough to capture the young people's interest and stop the migration to the cities? Well, I'm sure we've all enjoyed and learned a lot from what both our guests have had to say. We look forward to the next meeting in the series, Other Lands, Other Problems, which will be on Monday next. That's at 8:15, and do please come on time.
Pushy bastard.